Welcome to the RSPcast. This is episode number 21. And what I'm doing this week is taking an excerpt from a long conversation that I had with former RSP contributor Eric Stoner. You know him as Bo Jackson if you followed him on Twitter. He's the former co-founder of Draft Mecca, as well as a writer who worked at RotoWorld and, of course, the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. And Eric's a good friend of mine, and I really value his eyes for the game. And oftentimes it's nice to be able to just kind of talk with someone who's been watching the game for a while, even if they're away from doing any type of analysis or writing. So Eric and I caught up, and this portion of the conversation that I'm sharing today is going to cover his thoughts as well as mine on John Gruden's Raiders offense, as well as thoughts on analytics, where it's going well, but also where maybe sometimes the context can be missing, especially some of the popular rants that the analytics crowd seems to have against football nowadays. We're gonna take that on a little bit. And then we're also going to end this particular session with a conversation about Adrian Peterson and some of the analysis that we've seen out there in regards to Peterson now that he's signed with Washington. So I hope you enjoy this show. If you don't know anything about Eric, I'm just going to sum it up this way. Someone I know within the NFL community several years ago told me that someone high up in an NFL organization basically said, "Who the hell is Eric Stoner?" And when I said, "Why?" they said, "If that guy decides that he wants to be in a position higher up in the league and just needs to get the training that he needs and serve his time, he has the potential to do that." So like I said, I value his eye for the game and his knowledge of it, and I hope that you'll enjoy the conversation that ensues. You know, you talk about RPOs and these new hotshot guys, and, you know, I've joked around repeatedly probably on a number of podcasts that, as you claim, the sports nerds are really mad at John Gruden, you know, and I see a lot of kind of passive aggressive or just even flat out just insulting comments about Gruden because he came out and pretty much just said, you know, kind of trolled the analytics crowd and you know, in terms of some of the things that he was mentioning. So what's your take on the Raiders and John Gruden and this offense? Because I tend to feel like me and a few other people, like Harmon and I and a couple other folks, seem to feel pretty good about the Raiders, you know, but there are a lot of folks who are like, it looks like that they've got their torches out and they're ready to, like, you know, they're ready to roust them out of the house and see if they can do some mean things to them.
Yeah, and I mean, those people will probably have their day. And I think you and I already talked about this. Those people will have their day like 4 or 5 years from now when he drafts talent. Yes, when he has to like potentially maybe like draft or develop a quarterback besides Derek Carr down the line, or like this is really the team that he has put together. Then yes, those people will have their day. Yes. But right now, him stepping into a veteran team where they're pretty much locked and loaded and ready to go offensively. The defense needs work, obviously. It's not a great defense, but in terms of you hired the guy to run. He's an offensive guy. Like, that's what you hired him to do. And I think that people will be surprised that John Gruden still knows how to coach football. It's going to be like this crazy, shocking revelation to people that John Gruden is a really good coach. And I mean, people can say that he hasn't been doing anything, just being up in the booth, but he's been keeping up with football. He's been watching NFL football and college football. He's been doing the draft stuff. So he has, you know, a semi good handle on the young talent in the league, what they were doing in college. I mean, he's prepared for those quarterback camp episodes. Like, he's not in those episodes just like
telling war stories.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he can watch, like, I think it might have been Derek Carr that had a recent interview about it, where he was like, yeah, in my quarterback camp episode, like, off camera, like he was able to show me plays and have me diagram plays and then, you know, show me plays from like back in 1990 of Brett Favre doing the exact same concept and everything. And not only that, like you watch the dude in the first preseason game, like chewing the refs out on the very first drive, like he's ready to go. Like he's ready to coach football. And the thing is like it's still the same game.
That's what people don't seem to understand. Why are people marketing? I feel like people are trying to make it sound like the game is different because it adds to their appeal. People's going to click on them more because if they say it's new, that they've got something new to say that nobody else does, as opposed to, you know, what you said, which is what Kyle Shanahan's been doing was essentially what John Gruden had already done.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, if you go back and look at those early, like those teams that he coached with the Raiders the first time around too, like they ran the ball and they had a power run game, but they were one of the most pass heavy teams in the league too. Like Rich Gannon made the Pro Bowl 3 times. I think Gruden's final year there, he led the league in attempts. Charlie Garner was the closest thing to like 1,000 yard back we've had since Marshall Faulk. He's had a 1,000 yard receiver every single year he's been a head coach. And you brought this up when we were talking earlier, like he gets production out of not just one wide receiver position. He can get it out of the X. He can get it out of the Z. His offensive schemes are very, very sound. I mean, like the whole, everybody wants to push that, you know, it's a passing league. You need to throw more. And saying that this guy's crazy because, I mean, I think that he's trolling everybody. I mean, they're going to have a power run game, but he's not really going to take it back to 1995 because when he was a coach in the 2000s, he didn't coach like that.
No.
He was, no. I mean, he was one of the best of the West Coast guys. Like Shanahan, like the zone boot and the off and outside zone, like that was a very like specific subset of the, like all these guys were together, like originally in, they originally in San Francisco, obviously went to Green, and then these guys were all together in Green Bay. And then, I mean, there were so many there, like the West Coast offense has so many different versions of it that it's not even like, there is no singular West Coast offense anymore. So, I mean, he will have a power run game, but like he has always been a pretty aggressive passer. I mean, and what everybody is screaming for people to do and throw on early downs and throw to your backs. Like that was one of his waves, and still got a ton of production out of pretty much every wide receiver that came across his path. So I think that, like I said, the people that are with the pitchforks out will probably have their day eventually, but early on, I think it's going to surprise people how good that Oakland Raiders offense is going to be.
Yeah, because I mean, you think about, I think they've watched one too many Spider 2 Y Banana videos and feel like that all he does is throw to a fullback, and oh, he had to get a power running fullback, and oh, they're going to run these heavy sets and these power types of sets. Well, yeah, they're going to do that, and they're going to get some really good run fits, and you're going to see Marshawn Lynch get some breakaway runs, or Doug Martin get some breakaway runs, or if both those guys get banged up, maybe Chris Warren will get some of those plays. But you're going to see a lot of that. But at the same time, even back as far as when he was the offensive coordinator in Philadelphia and had Ricky Waters, who was a dual threat back for them, with Charlie Garner kind of coming in. And then they brought in that old man, Irving Fryer, who was like the number one draft pick for the Patriots and really didn't do all that much there other than the first few good years, and then kind of floundered a bit or was decent but nothing great, and then went to with Marino. And, oh, after he had some good years with Marino, it was like, let's move on from him. He's too old. And suddenly he's a Pro Bowl caliber player again. And they're throwing to the tight end and they're throwing to him. And even with you know, you can add in Antonio Bryant and Keenan McCardell and Joey Galloway and Tim Brown and Jerry Rice. And you just add in these players, and they've all had strong years for him as older players, whether it was the X or the Y that they, or the X or the Z, excuse me. And he got decent tight end play. So he's versatile in that respect. And then on top of it, you just think about the fact that, you know, you look at a lot of teams in the league and they will run two tight end sets. I mean, the Patriots run a lot of two tight end sets. The Atlanta does. A lot of teams that have been successful and gone to the Super Bowl, like both those teams in Seattle and the 49ers, exactly. And, you know, and the Ravens, they ran the ball a lot. And they were like, you know, it's, they do that because what? What's your base defense? It's a nickel. So if they've got these big hosses of offensive linemen, yeah. You're gonna say, look, you know, this is what we're gonna do. And so I think that, you know, and Gruden has always been this way. You watch his quarterback camps, and I think what a lot of people miss about him when he interviews, he's such a great interviewer for that show. And I haven't seen a show that really even compares, because he makes it entertaining and it makes it seem like he's just kind of straightforward and lobbing them softballs. But he'll time it, and then he'll give you something that's kind of hard hitting, kind of a way that he goes and looks at the quarterback and goes, okay, so I've given you some easy stuff and made you look good so the agents are happy. But here's, I know that you don't know this, and I'm going to put it out on you just to test you a little bit, just to show you the stick, you know, even though I've been giving you the carrot all this time, just to watch them have that oh-sh moment, you know,
right.
And he does that just enough. And sometimes it's subtler than the scenes that ESPN kind of plays up. Sometimes there's other ones in there that are embedded that are kind of played up. And he tests guys. And some of the guys, like I remember Bridgewater would, you know, he did a couple things with Bridgewater, and Bridgewater just kind of said, yeah, I felt like going home. I almost left the program, this, that, and the other. And then I remember him doing it with a Clemson quarterback. I think it was Taj Boyd. I think that was who the quarterback was. And Boyd looked like a deer in headlights. Boyd looked like he wanted no part of having, like, when is this going to be over? And it was subtle. Most people didn't, just kind of missed it. But he may be too smart for his own good and trying to control and pick things. But when it comes to taking the talent that he has, if it's good talent, yeah, I'm not worried about him in the least.
So. No, not at all. And I remember him talking about this when he first got to Tampa. And because, I mean, they had Michael Pittman was like a decent pass catching back. I think he was actually pretty productive in terms of the receiving game for them.
Yes.
But like what they were going to do with Mike Alstott and stuff like that. And Gruden was like, look, I like to have a power run game. I will throw to set up the run, but eventually I'm going to have a lead and I want to be able to run the clock out. And yeah. We were talking about Shanahan earlier. And it's a very, very similar, very, like I said, the zone blocking and the zone boot is different, but philosophically, it's not entirely too different from what they want to do in terms of like, when you can get into those big, heavy sets and throw the ball out of it, like it makes playing quarterback and playing offense very, very, very easy. I mean, and that's exactly what Shanahan did. Atlanta, how you were talking about, one of the heaviest two-back teams in the NFL the year they went to the Super Bowl. Very, very heavy two-back team. Very heavy. And I don't know. Like 11 personnel is great and all, but running from one-back sets is hard. It's hard to do. And people want to give up on the run game and throw the ball, like just throw the ball on every down. But, I mean, why do you think it's so hard to throw the ball on third and long? I mean, if you have no credence or threat of a run game whatsoever, like NFL defenses are good enough to where if they know that they're playing pass, like they can stop the pass.
Yeah. It's all the run game. needs to be contextualized better when you're tracking how the run game affects the passing game. And there's just not enough contextualization going on. We're at this very basic idea of, let's show statistically how the passing game is more efficient than the run game, and therefore it's a better thing, and therefore the run game shouldn't really exist on the level that it does, and these plays are kind of stupid, and you know, things like that. And what I think what we're seeing, unfortunately, is they're missing some things. You see some of the stat guys trying to get into film, but they still haven't learned yet the difference between, you know, an outside run and an inside run, and you're going to see situations where they're basically saying, look, Alvin Kamara isn't a good, you know, I think this was, I'm trying to remember who it was, but somebody sent me a tape of an analyst who was basically saying, you know, Alvin Kamara isn't a very good outside, isn't a very good inside runner. So he shouldn't run, they shouldn't run him so much inside. And what they were using as proof was an outside zone that he cut back inside because of the way the defense was playing it. But the guy was making, apparently the analyst was making the reason, saying that the statistical service he was using tracked this as an inside play. And you're like, well, dude, this, your stat service who was doing this, that might be part of the problem, because if they're tracking an outside zone run as an inside play, they're missing the context of why he cut inside, because the design was outside. And so you have to, you kind of have to look at things with better context, or how, you know, a successful run set up the pass and how that freezes defenders. And that's a lot of work. It's a lot of work, and they're not prepared or ready to do that yet. And maybe someday we'll have the technology where with GPS tracking, maybe it'll be easier where you can kind of show how a hesitation one way or another was baited by the run, and you can filter things out without having to track every single movement on a play with different guys, and that's still problematic in itself. But yeah, I mean, so it's a, I like where stats are going and what they're trying to do and the reach with that. But at the same time, it's the, let's be definitive about this, and let's have the arrogance to tell certain, you know, there's some things they're right about, and it's not arrogance, you know, I mean, certainly I understand, but there are some things where you kind of go, dude, really, you don't have to tell, you know, somebody tell this coach that they need to do X, Y, and Z. And I'm thinking, okay, well maybe, but you know, there's some of that is a little bit more showmanship than it is, you know, going to be helpful, prescriptive, or even in the proper context of how football works when you look at how it all works on the field. One of the things I want to ask you, I mean, like if you got a little bit more time that we can.
Yeah, actually, I want to take like what you're talking about even a step further.
Okay.
Because I think the problem that, whether it's data people or fantasy people or whatever, the problems that they're trying to solve relative to football are, how can we be more efficient and how can we score more points? How can we have the most output? How can we maximize our output offensively? I mean, especially in fantasy, like
yes.
Yards and points is what makes fantasy go. So they're inclined to look at research that will lead to outcomes of teams should be scoring, like trying to score and gain as many yards and score as many points as possible. That's true to a certain extent. The real goal, I mean, especially when you're talking about in the regular season, which is fantasy season, you are not trying to expose your entire playbook and show all of your strategies and lay everything out in week 4 against the Lions.
Right.
Exactly. The point of an individual football game in the regular season is not to score as many points as possible. Like, you need to score more points than that particular opponent while showing as little as possible to your future opponents.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, and like when you can really wrap your head around that, like teams purposely throw bad plays out there just to mess up their rate counts. Like the example that Tony Romo gave on Monday Night Football that one night when he was like, yeah, Belichick really never does this, but he's running this blitz look just to mess up with the third and long stats that you're tracking. Like people throw, I mean, there's Justice and I talk about this all the time, like, and he cut up a perfect example of it. Like Jacksonville played Pittsburgh twice last year, and they ran so many what people would probably consider just garbage inside isolation plays out of 22 personnel. And when it really mattered in that AFC divisional round game, they ran on the goal line, they ran an ISO out of 22 personnel, and Pittsburgh stopped it. And the very next play, they came out and gave the exact same look, and it was that little play-action ISO, like, pop pass where the fullback, Bohannon, yeah, leaped through and caught the touchdown pass in the back of the end zone. Like, that play doesn't work unless you set that up with the 200 garbage ISO plays that went for 3 yards a carry before that.
Yes. Yes, exactly. You know, I mean, you have to, a lot of plays are based on, because a lot of plays have a counter to it or a complement to it.
Right.
And you have to get the defense used to the fact that you're doing that enough times that they're going to jump it, even if it's not always successful. You know, everyone's always like, well, why are they running that play if it's not successful? Well, I mean, they're trying to make it successful, but they also know that there's there's another side benefit to continuing to run this play if you're patient, you know, and that's part of, you know, the Jaguars, I thought, were the quintessential patient team with the run last year. It was like, you know, we've got a great defense. We're going to be able to run. And that Pittsburgh game was a great example. The first Pittsburgh game, where it was like by the fourth quarter, Pittsburgh was playing undisciplined. They were getting tired. And by
you
the end
tell
of that,
they were straight up worn out by the fourth quarter in overtime on defense.
Yeah. And that's exactly, and that's how that works. And it's, yes, it's not as exciting. And I think your theory makes total sense, which is that, yeah, they're looking at it from their frame of perspective has been fantasy football and or just efficiencies. And that oftentimes is true too, is that when you're in a business setting and you have people who are dealing with efficiencies, the positive of it is they can come up with some very inventive ideas that can be helpful and really do improve things. But the pitfall to that too is if they don't have any experience managing an operation and understanding, you know, what happens on the, you know, in a certain contextual level of working with teams, and the value of things that are off script and improvisational, or give room for creativity or room for, you know, certain habits and doing things a certain way and understanding the human element to it, what ends up happening is that you end up going overboard and you wind up pushing something that really doesn't fit or doesn't work in theory, or they don't understand the actual theory. They don't understand the actual practicality of things because it's missing in their mathematical point of view. So that is fascinating to me. I have another question for you about a player, and that's, you know, Adrian Peterson getting signed by Washington today. And I, tell me if I'm crazy or not, or if you remember this, but I know that Adrian Peterson has been one of the great, you know, power duo man blocking runners in football. But am I missing something? That didn't he used to run a lot of inside zone and
that's
a lot
fine.
Of, you know, and outside zone, like, you know, because I noticed something where I was hearing people tell me that he only runs power and he only runs this. And I'm thinking, wasn't like prime Adrian Peterson before the 2010s? I thought early in his career that's all he ran was mostly
that's
zone.
That's all they ran early. I mean, and obviously, like, certain run schemes will be built around certain plays, but there's not, I mean, even teams that like Mike Shanahan's Denver Broncos, like they were the outside zone team. Dude, they still run a ton of power and counter. Like they still ran those plays. And a lot of it is because the gap blocking plays are good constraint plays for the zone ones and vice versa. Like all gap plays, for most of them, you want to invite penetration upfield, kick a dude out, and then hit it upfield in the alley. But when you have a defensive line, like let's say you want to run power and kick out the end man on the line of scrimmage. Well, if that guy is not really coming upfield and he like their defensive line is disciplined and playing laterally along the line of scrimmage, your best answer for that is to run outside zone and just reach the dude or run a toss and reach the dude.
Right.
Like, so all these
he's being passive. And so you're going to be able to just drive him downfield.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, all these run concepts build off of each other. And the thing, like if a guy can't run a particular type of running play, it's not so much with ability. It's that they don't understand the reads and the concepts, because the reads for the back on the plays are very between gap and man are very, very different.
Completely opposite.
Yeah, it really is completely opposite. But Adrian Peterson there's not a run play that exists in the NFL from that a running back could run that he hasn't run and run well.
Yeah.
Does he have top end speed anymore?
No.
Are you really going to want to line him up in shotgun and get him moving laterally behind the line of scrimmage? No, but he can run. I mean, if you're lining him up, if you're under center and you're going to run the ball, he can run it from two back. He can run it from 11 personnel. I mean, he can run. He can run personnel. Outside zone. Yeah. The concepts are not going to be a problem. It's the particular types, like more downhill versus laterally.
Yeah.
And obviously you're just not going to use him in the passing game at all. That was never a strength of his. And I mean, there's just no purpose to it at this point.
Yeah. I mean, certainly he's had, you know, I mean, he had 4 years out of the about the dozen that he's been in the league where he had over 30 receptions, but that's not a ton. But when you look at Washington, Rob Kelly had 12 receptions last year. I'm sure that was more than what Samaje Perine had. And when I was watching them last, you know, I'm watching them even this year, like I'm watching Friday's game and I'm watching them run and I'm going, okay, well, let's see, 12 personnel. They ran a lot of 12 personnel with Peterson last year in Arizona. And I'm thinking there's an ISO play. There's a duo. So they've run you can see that, you know, probably about a third, somewhere between about 20 to 30% of their plays, they ran kind of gap oriented or man oriented schemes. And then I was like, I think it was Mark Bullock, who does fine work. So, you know, he is a, you know, he writes for the Washington Post doing their football stuff. And, you know, I follow Mark on Twitter. He does a lot of really good work, but I thought to myself, I read his piece today, and he said that, you know, running zone, inside zone and outside zone really isn't the strength of his game. And, you know, he's a well-known gap blocker. And I looked at Mark's picture because I've never really seen Mark's picture. And, you know, I'm just, you know, look, I get made fun of for being the old man in this room. So it's my chance to say, Mark, no hard feelings here on this one. But it's like, I looked at you and thought, do you remember anything beyond 2014? Because you're a young dude, man. Maybe you were like in grade school when, when Adrian Peterson was running zone and running roughshod through the league. And you know, he still has the quickness and the change of direction. And again, I emphasize, I mean, I'm making fun of Mark here for his age, but he does good work. And I would definitely recommend following him. But it's a... But, you know, it kind of boggled my mind, and I wondered if maybe I had dementia or something, and maybe I had forgotten.
It's not like for the last –
you're in the middle.
It's not like every single carry this guy has ever taken has been out of a two-back 21 personnel set.
Yeah.
And that's like those are the only runs where he was able to have success. It's crazy. Like all teams have all these concepts in their playbook. He's done. I mean, and like you were talking, a lot of people it seems like kind of in the modern age, like the history of football kind of started in like 2010. Right. You know what I mean? Like when we really started getting like HD video and things were going up on YouTube, and yeah, we have like video, like we can preserve history because like we don't have to just rely on NFL films to throw up an old game every now and then. Like right. History is actually preserved at this point. So it's like football history starts at like 2010 and nobody remembers anything before that.
Well, I'm sure that some of us listening here are probably going to think that you and I are grumpy old men, at least in terms of the way that we're looking at the game. But I do really appreciate your insights, Eric. And on behalf of the RSP readers, you know, we miss having you on the website, but we definitely enjoyed this conversation. And on behalf of Eric and I, I'd like to thank you again for listening to the RSP cast. You can subscribe to us on iTunes as well as Stitcher, and Google Play, and Blueberry. I would really appreciate rating and reviewing this podcast. Your feedback is important to us. And you can always check out more of the Rookie Scouting Portfolio's work at YouTube at Matt Waldman's RSP Film Room channel, as well as the site www.mattwaldmanrsp.com. Thanks again.